Is everybody in? The ceremony is about to begin.
And here we go.
Dr. Evil, we have a problem.
This is going to be cool.
I mean, after all, you're nerds.
They look like a couple of dorks.
Perfect. We couldn't have planned this better.
As of this moment, they're on double secret probation.
What's happening, hot stuff?
These nerds are a threat to our way of life.
What? English, do you speak it?
Yes.
Then you know what I'm saying.
Yes.
And welcome, everybody, to the Weekend Sports Report. I'm Packer Dave. Glad to have you with us today. And the NFL season is upon us. We already know what happened with Carolina and Denver. And now we've got a whole slate of games coming up for Sunday and Monday night. We're going to talk about it in this segment with Jeff Rich. He's in Arizona and is a co-host on the Sports Byline USA Network. And also with Steve Leventhal in Chicago. He just recently visited Hallis Hall and has some audio for us from Jay Cutler and John Fox. And a bit of analysis from the Chicago perspective. So, Jeff, welcome to you. How are you today?
I'm doing really well. It's been a while since last football season. Thanks for having me on, guys.
Okay, good to have you. And Steve, welcome to the Weekend Sports Report.
Aloha, McGarrett. Congratulations on the Cadavaliers finally breaking through. It may be the year to be a Cleveland fan this year, huh?
Exactly.
It just might be.
Yeah, Jeff is originally from Cleveland. So before we get into all of this, that had to be a great night for you. I was thinking about you when the Cavs won that night. First championship for major sports in Cleveland since 64, correct?
Yeah, 52 years go by. You know, it kind of changes everything. It kind of changes that stigma of being from Cleveland and rooting for Cleveland teams, the Browns being the exception. I don't think it changes anything for the Cleveland Browns, but definitely a moment of elation on June 19th, 2016. The city of Cleveland celebrated appropriately and accordingly and without violence, and it was really nice to see. And it's really nice to see the Indians pick up where they left off. They're really hot right now, and we'll see what Hugh Jackson, Robert Griffin III, and all the new faces with the Cleveland Browns have in store for us in 2016, but the bar is set pretty low.
Okay. That's what this show is about, too, right, Steve? We set the bar low.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Now, let's look at some of the Sunday games, and we're going to talk a bit about the teams and some of the things that may have happened in the offseason as we go along here. But we've got the Packers at Jacksonville. That's an early game. And Green Bay gets Jordy Nelson back, Jeff. And also Eddie Lacy looks like he's in pretty good shape. The defense, they've added some talent with the addition of Kenny Clark up on the defensive line. They've got a lot of high draft choices in the secondary. And they take on Jacksonville at Jacksonville. So your thoughts on this game? A lot of people would say that Green Bay should take it this game pretty easily, but I think they might be underestimating Jacksonville. What do you think?
Well, there's a reason that Jacksonville, Shahid Khan over there, decided that he was going to stick with Bradley no matter what. That defense is growing year over year, and, you know, Bortles in year three, they've got weapons all over their offense. You know, warm weather game, it's you know, second week of September in North Florida. Packers have always struggled playing these early season games in the heat. But other than that, I think that you got to take the Packers all the way here. I think, like you said, they get Jordy Nelson back. They improve on a lot of things that went wrong for them a year ago. And I'd like to see McCarthy and A-Rodge and everybody else get off to a good start and leave Jacksonville 1-0.
A lot of people are picking Green Bay as a Super Bowl contender. Recently in the NFL Network, number 4 in the power rankings, behind Carolina, Arizona, and Seattle. But let's hear from Packers coach Mike McCarthy.
It's always a combination of things for your football team. You know, a healthy training camp is probably the most important. The ebb and flow of our training camp, I feel it has prepared us for the type of season that we have from just a pure scheduling standpoint. But at the end of the day, it's still football. You have to have a quality, high-quality preparation if you think it's going to have a chance of leading to a top performance. So that's just kind of always been our approach.
Here's quarterback Aaron Rodgers.
It was a long training camp. You know, we showed up early, had the issues in Canton, and then I just played one game. So it's been a lot of meeting time, a lot of practice time, but I think we're all ready to get back on the field with the guys we got and look forward to starting the season.
Mike was saying today he liked the vibe or the feel. I mean, are you kind of excited about the way people are feeling heading into this first game now?
I think everybody's excited to get back out there. It was a hot, steamy practice. I mean, the indoor facility because of the rain. A lot of guys were sweating a lot, myself included. So we got to replenish our fluids now, and it'll probably be a good test for the game this weekend. It's going to be hot and humid, but we'll be ready to play. We've been practicing in some decent humidity this preseason, and we'll be ready to go.
All right, so it's the Packers at the Jacksonville Jaguars. Now let's look at the Bears. And Chicago in week one taking on the Houston Texans at Houston. And Houston was a playoff team last year. And it seems like O'Brien has things running quite smoothly down there. J.J. Watt looks like he's going to be playing. So, Steve, first off, you were at Halas Hall. What's the mood around there? And do the Bears think they can improve on last season? I'm sure they hope they can. But do they have the talent to do so?
Well, that remains the big question. Do they have the talent? Because, and also, they've been bit severely by the injury bug. And, you know, so much so that they had to bring in, you know, another wide receiver. And Kevin White, he still hasn't played in a regular season game. We have to see what happens there. Alshon Jeffrey's been banged up. You know, the biggest problem they're going to have, of course, one is J.J. Watt on the other side of the line. Because he probably is the two players combined into one. And then, can that offense do anything? And then I guess the third question would be, can the Bears' defense stop anybody?
Okay, and Jeff, actually a lot of people thought Jay Cutler had a pretty good year last year. His offensive coordinator, Adam Gase, now in Miami. But your thoughts on Cutler at this point in his career?
My thoughts on Jay Cutler, when he shows up, when he wants to be there, he is probably a top five quarterback in the league. When he's not, you know, probably more towards that bottom five.
All right. Well,
you know, I've been on the Cutler bandwagon for some time, but lately I've been very disillusioned because, as I see, he makes a lot of bad decisions. He throws the ball into coverage when he should either throw it out of bounds or eat the ball. I just don't think he likes to take sacks. But my biggest complaint with Jay is just bad decision making out there on the field.
All right. Well, with us right now, Steve Leventhal in Chicago. He was at Halas Hall this week, and Jeff Rich. He's in Arizona, transplant from Cleveland, and you can hear him on the Sports Byline USA radio network on Sunday mornings from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Eastern time. But speaking of Chicago at Houston, let's listen to quarterback Jay Cutler.
At the top in a lot of different categories. I mean, first most, I mean, you look at the pressure they bring, and they bring it with four guys, five guys. They don't have to bring seven, eight guys to get home. So JJ and that crew. And then the secondary, they feed off of them. They're able to play man. They're able to show you different coverages. So it's a good defense.
Now, Coach John Fox.
You know, I think they've added team speed for sure. I think the running back position, through free agency and the draft, as well as the receiver position, I think with a couple of draft picks, they've added some team speed for sure. Obviously, they went out and paid Brock Osweiler quite a bit to be their quarterback, and you know, from what I've seen, he's looked pretty good.
All right, that is the Bears at the Texans, and that's an early game kickoff also. Now let's look at some of the other interesting games around the NFL with Jeff and Steve. And, Jeff, you've got the Cleveland Browns, your Cleveland Browns, at Philadelphia. You've got Robert Griffin III at quarterback and Carson Wentz, the number one draft choice for Philadelphia, at quarterback. So kind of two unknown quantities here at quarterback. And we've seen Griffin in his rookie year do well, but not so well in recent years. Now he's in Cleveland. So first, your thoughts on Griffin, and then let's talk about Carson Wentz after that.
Well, Griffin certainly hooked up with Hugh Jackson in order to resurrect his career. You know, it didn't go well in Washington. A lot of coaching changes. By the time Jay Gruden got there, it was quite obvious that Gruden did not want to work with Griffin. That was indicated by starting Kirk Cousins at quarterback. So new opportunity, new beginning. He's got a lot of familiar faces. The draft pick, Spencer Drago, plays the offensive line. We all know about Josh Gordon. Corey Coleman, the rookie first-round pick. They had a good choice of receivers, and they went with Coleman over Laquon Treadwell, over Josh Doctson. So they really believe in Corey Coleman and this convert of Terrell Pryor to play quarterback. It's going to be a very interesting year for the Cleveland offense.
Okay, and Chase Daniels was, they were thinking about maybe starting him for Philadelphia, but they went with the rookie. What do you think about that decision?
Well, you know, there was something to be said for the familiarity. Doug Peterson, got to spend a lot of time with Chase Daniel backing up Alex Smith there in Kansas City. They both go to the Philadelphia Eagles in the offseason. Sam Bradford gets moved a couple of weeks ago, so you knew that it was going to be either Daniel or Wentz, and they made the big splash. They mortgaged their future to move up in the draft to take Carson Wentz, number two overall. Actually, they got that pick from Cleveland. So Cleveland's looking at a team in Philadelphia where they own their first round draft pick. So Cleveland certainly, even if they are tanking, this is one of those few games that they would want to win again if they are tanking this season.
Now, you mentioned Sam Bradford going to Minnesota, and you have the Vikings at the Titans, and that's also an early game, as is the Cleveland-Philadelphia game. So this is kind of a tough situation for Bradford to walk into. Not much time to learn the offense. But in a situation like this, do you just hand the ball to Adrian Peterson all day and keep a very simple game plan for Bradford? Because I actually like the Vikings in this game. A lot of people might not because of their quarterback situation, Teddy Bridgewater going down and Sam Bradford coming in. But I do like Minnesota just because of Adrian Peterson. What about you?
Yeah, you know, if North Turner's going to rely heavily on Adrian Peterson to carry the load here, why can't you do that with Sean Hill? I just don't think it's fair to Sam Bradford to throw him in there after, 10 days on the roster. I like Minnesota a lot, not only in this game, but all season. I thought that they were definitely a legitimate threat to the Packers in the NFC North this season until Bridgewater went down, but in all honesty, how good is Teddy Bridgewater? How much better is Teddy Bridgewater than Sean Hill or Sam Bradford?
And Sean Hill's had his moments in the league. I mean, most of the time he's been a backup, but he has played well in key situations. Now let's look at some of the other games on the slate. The Giants at Dallas, that's a late game. The Cowboys going with a rookie quarterback, Jeff, because Tony Romo is injured once again. So will their rookie quarterback do it for him, do you think? And he's had a great preseason. And what's with Romo? It seems like he is so fragile right now.
You know, when you break your back, I think that's just a matter of playing a violent sport. Dak Prescott's looked great in the preseason, and I think that everybody was wondering, if Romo would have struggled in these first couple games rather than just being out, by way of injury, would people still be calling for Dak because of the great preseason that he's had
and
the heroics that he pulled off at Mississippi State?
Okay, now, New England at Arizona, that's where you are in Phoenix. That is the Sunday night game, and I think NBC was probably hoping that Tom Brady would be playing that game, but you have Carson Palmer and the Arizona Cardinals right now. They are legitimate Super Bowl contenders. So what's the feeling there in Arizona on this game?
I think that Arizona got off to a slow start during the preseason, but they have a top five coaching staff. Carson Palmer, despite his shakiness in the playoffs, I think that Carson Palmer is poised to have a really good season. And, Larry Fitzgerald is going to give you what he always gives you, at least when he's healthy. And it's just a matter of complimenting the young kids, the John Browns, the Jerron Browns, the David Johnsons, getting it going. And I think the only question mark on this Arizona team is, they went out and got Kandici in the first round of the draft, despite the question marks around his character. They went out and got Chandler Jones for a second-round pick, which is a little high for a player rather than a pick, but they spend that second-round pick on a guy from the New England Patriots, and it's a matter of can they get to the quarterback, whether it's Jimmy Garoppolo or whoever else they're going to face throughout this 2016 season. I think confidence is pretty high for at least a Super Bowl run. I don't think that the expectation is that they win the Super Bowl, but I think that when you lose the conference championship, the next step is getting to the Super Bowl, and everybody in Arizona hopes that they can pull that off.
Hey, can't wait to get down there. I'll be down there in October, so that should be good. And Steve, your mom lives down there, and you go down there. Are you going to wait till spring training this year? You're going to come down a little early?
Come down a little early? Nah, spring training probably as usual.
Okay. Pittsburgh at Washington on Monday night. That's the first game. I love this first week because you have two Monday night games. So Pittsburgh at Washington. Then later, the Los Angeles Rams at the San Francisco 49ers. So that's the slate for Monday night. A lot of interesting action this week in the National Football League. Now, Jeff and Steve are going to touch on college football. And my Badgers got a big win last week, so I was pretty excited about that. But, Steve, you were at the Northwestern game last week, and so take it here, college football.
Well, Northwestern, you know, they lost to a MAC team. They got nothing to write home about. It was, you know, so much more exciting, though, as I'm sure Jeff will agree, the fact that there were a lot of really good non-conference top 25 matchups this weekend.
Well, I'll start with the Northwestern game. I think that P.J. Fleck brings that Western Michigan team to play, whether they're playing an FCS squad, a MAC conference rival, or a Big Ten team. We saw that they competed really well with a really good Michigan State team a year ago, and it was no different against Northwestern. They were able to get the W against Pat Fitzgerald's team, but you know, positives for Western Michigan end up being real negatives for the Big Ten Conference, especially Northwestern. As far as the excitement of college football, wow! I mean, it got started with a bang on Saturday morning. I was in Colorado actually watching Houston and Oklahoma go at it. Oklahoma's got a brutal non-conference schedule before they get into Big 12 play this year, but they're starting with their foot in the hole. I think with this college football playoff, it's really interesting to see these early season matchups because the playoff field is four teams deep. Nobody's afraid to play these teams anymore. Everybody knows that Ohio State lost to Virginia Tech in week two of the 2014 season, and then they bounced back to make the playoff with a great run in the Big Ten Championship, and then won the whole thing with impressive wins over Alabama and Oregon. I know that was 2 years ago, but it still kind of sets the precedent that you can play those big games early, and we saw plenty of those big games, a lot of them at neutral sites, though.
Oh, yeah, that Oklahoma-Houston game was great. Another fantastic game with Notre Dame and Texas, and even the Florida State-Ole Miss game was wonderful. Just great, great weekend action.
Yeah, you really it's almost a shame the NFL has to start because college football got to own the weekend, and it was a lot of fun. Not that I'm not looking forward to the NFL, but there's just a certain thing of, you know, there's just something about the chaos of college football. Like, for example, the triple overtime game between NIU and Wyoming that went until 3 in the morning up in Laramie that I was fortunate enough to attend on Saturday night. So just a lot of cool stuff going on. The Texas, you know, like you said, Texas Notre Dame was a barn burner. Old Miss, Florida State, what a comeback. Houston, you know, what a job Tom Herman's done there. And everybody else, you know, held up chalk.
All right, and the Badgers beating LSU at Lambeau Field. That wasn't expected, so that was exciting.
I think when you look at that, when you look at these early season games, and you know, I don't like the talk of conference supremacy too much, but I think that we've plateaued back to even. The Big Ten goes 12-2 in non-conference play. Granted, they had a lot of easier games, but you know, you look at the SEC, who everybody's kind of made to be the gold standard lately in college football, anyway. And they go 7-7 with losses in a few of the big games. The LSU Wisconsin game, Ole Miss loses to Florida State, Auburn lost to Clemson. Just lots of good stuff going on.
But Alabama did show they took USC to the woodshed. They are definitely a team to be reckoned with.
Most certainly. Right. You know, I expected USC to get beaten pretty soundly, but that was a whole new level.
you have been also visiting a lot of stadiums lately. Tell us about your little trip there.
We got to catch the Thursday night game between the New Mexico Lobos and the South Dakota Coyotes. Then we watched the Rocky Mountain Showdown at Mile High Stadium, where the field was actually naked. It'll be, you know, it was all painted up for Thursday night's NFL kickoff game between the Panthers and the Broncos. But you know, watched the Colorado Buffaloes. They might be back. I mean, it's they had a long way to climb, but they've been kind of the dregs of the Big 12, and they only beat a middle of the road Mountain West team in Colorado State. But it was nice to see this kid Saif Oliafau from Colorado, who I watched start as a freshman 3 years ago at Arizona State, and now he's a senior and he's got all that poise and all that leadership and all that experience. So Colorado might not be the laughing stock that they've been going forward. And I mentioned that I was at the Wyoming Northern Illinois game, the last game. It was going to be the last game of the night anyway, and then it got delayed 2 hours by lightning, so we didn't kick off until 10:15 Mountain Time. And I think that Wyoming scored their final touchdown in triple overtime at like 2:44 a.m. Mountain Time. So it was a long day of college football and a long weekend of college football, which is a good thing.
Well, you got your money's worth anyway. Quickly, what baseball game did you see?
Just saw the local teams, the Colorado Rockies hosting the Arizona Diamondbacks at Coors Field. Cool little experience. Coors Field's a great place to watch a game, and being marooned in Arizona like I am, we don't get too many opportunities to watch outdoor baseball after spring training, so got to enjoy the nice little Rocky Mountain breeze there.
All right. Jeff Rich, you can hear him on Sunday morning, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Eastern Time. That's 8 to 10 Pacific Time at sportsbyline.com. on the Sports Byline USA radio network. Steve will stick around with us, and he'll talk baseball with John Poulter later in the program. We've got Mark Grody from CBS Radio in Chicago coming up next right here on the Weekend Sports Report. I'm Packer Dave. Stick around.
The Year in Sports, a presentation of CRLRadio.com. I'm Bob Terrell. Join us now in 1982 on The Year in Sports. Pat Summerall and John Madden called Super Bowl 16, which saw the San Francisco 49ers beating the Cincinnati Bengals 26-21 on January 24th. This game marked the first time in Super Bowl history that the team who compiled the most yards lost. In 1982, the LA Lakers had a new coach, Pat Riley, who led Magic Johnson and the rest of the team to the NBA championship over the 76ers 4-2. Whitey Herzog led his St. Louis Cardinals to victory over the Milwaukee Brewers 4-3 in the 1982 World Series, nicknamed the Sud Series, due to the rivalry of Anheuser-Busch in St. Louis and Miller Brewing in Milwaukee. In the 65th season of the National Hockey League, 21 teams each played 80 games, with the New York Islanders winning their third straight Stanley Cup, sweeping the Vancouver Canucks in 4. I'm Bob Terrell. Thanks for joining us in 1982 on The Year in Sports, a presentation of CRLRadio.com.
Hi, this is Danny Lipford with tips for today's homeowner. If you're hanging a mirror or shelves, you'll need more support than drywall can offer by itself. Stay tuned and we'll talk about how to find your wall studs right after this. What's the first step of any building or repair project? I always make sure I have the tools and materials I need, starting with the QuickCrete mobile app. With easy one-touch access, you can watch project video instructions, quickly pull up a material shopping list, and make sure you have what you need, or use the app to figure out how much you need and find out where to buy it. You can even share your finished project via the Quick Share function. It's the tool you can use from start to finish. Download the QuickCrete mobile app on the App Store or Google Play today. To hang heavier items on your walls, you'll need the solid backing of a stud. That's one of the vertical 2x4s behind finished walls. The most reliable way to find them is with an electronic stud finder, which detects changes in density. You pass it over a wall, and lights and tones tell you when you found a stud. You can also hold a lamplight close to a wall and look for nail heads and seams in the drywall. Other low-tech methods include tapping and listening for hollow spaces, or looking alongside switches and outlet boxes, since they're usually attached to the side of a stud. The good news is that once you find one stud, you should be able to find them all, because most walls are laid out with a stud every 16 inches. I'm Danny Lipford with tips for today's homeowner.
Are you living with pain? I was, after a nasty fall. I got relief with 1 hour pain relief. I'm Barry Yarkoni, president, and here's Lisa, a Marine who was injured in Iraq.
After surviving an explosion, I was on horrible painkillers for lingering head, shoulder, back, and knee pain, but I hated the dangers and side effects. My friend told me about 1 hour pain relief, and now I'm off the drugs.
1 hour pain relief is the result of 15 years of research on an amazing extract from hops, the plant used to flavor beer.
Whether your pain is from an injury or just aging, you get safe all-day relief in less than 1 hour.
We're so sure you'll love 1 hour pain relief too that we'll send you a 1 week trial for just a small shipping charge. Call 800-269-9500 right now. That's 800-269-9500. There's no gimmicks, no obligation, no automatic shipments. Stop living with pain. Call 800-269-9500 for your 1 week trial or visit onehourpainrelief.com. That's 800-269-9500.
You guys, you lollygagged the ball around the infield. You lollygagged your way down to first. You lollygagged in and out of the dugout. Do you know what that makes you? Larry?
Lollygaggers.
Lollygaggers. What's our record, Larry?
8-16.
8-16. How'd we ever win 8?
It's a miracle.
It's a miracle.
Hey, Packer Dave, this is Bob Uecker, Mr. Baseball. And, you know, when we think of cheeseheads in Wisconsin, your name immediately comes to mind. Not only cheesehead, but curdle cheese. When they talk about curdle cheese, letting it go sour, it's you, Dave. And we thank you for that, Packer Dave.
And we thank you for that, Mr. Baseball, Bob Uecker. I'm Packer Dave. This is the Weekend Sports Report. And now we bring in, from the Cubs broadcast team, the pre- and post-game man for them, Mark Grody. Mark, and you know who else? John Poulter, our sports professor from Toronto, Ontario. John, welcome to the show via Skype.
Thanks, Dave. Great to be with you.
All right. And Mark, you were just at the Cubs Brewers series up in Milwaukee. They have Thursday off, then Friday they start a series with the Astros. But the Brewers took that series and stand at 62-77, while the Cubs are at 89-50. And it was like a home crowd for you there, wasn't it?
Yeah, I mean, especially the very first day on Labor Day when they had a massive crowd there. I think it was 42,000 plus, and it was one of those days. Usually we kind of exaggerate, and it's hyperbole when a visiting team's crowd has presence. We say things like, oh, it's like half Cubs fans or three-quarters. And maybe for the first time, I think it actually was, you know, about a 50-50 split Cubs Brewers fans, maybe even a few more, especially in that first game on Labor Day. And I realize that this stuff ebbs and flows because the Cubs have stunk in the past. You know, the Brewers fans have completely outweighed the Cubs fans. But, you know, there's a whole bandwagon of people that are going to travel to Milwaukee or whatever Midwest locale the Cubs are in these days.
Okay. And John, you probably know that after the Braves and before the Brewers, a lot of Milwaukee fans kind of shifted their loyalty to the Cubs. So there's, you know, that goes back a long ways, but there's still some of that might linger there in the Milwaukee area. But, you know, a lot of fans up in the northern Chicago area, it's not a far drive. So, John, being the baseball expert that you are, I'd like you to talk to Mark about the NL race right now and what the Cubs' outlook is.
Well, I guess I look at this from a somewhat neutral standpoint, guys. I watch a lot of National League Baseball because of the TV networks, of course, that we get here. And it's kind of nice to see that National League Central being a strong division again. And Mark, you, as a Cubs supporter, you must be very happy to see that the way that the Cardinals have kind of taken a second seat to the Cubs this year, and that the Cubs came out of the gate fast. They had a bit of a lull in July there, but picked it up big time in August and went 22-6. And it looks like the Cubs might, for the first time in a long time, actually be the real thing. Is that the atmosphere that we're getting in Chicago as well?
And that's the point, that I think that for the first time probably in my lifetime that, let's say, even the Cubs don't, you know, advance through the playoffs and into the World Series, and I hate to kind of give that loser's mentality. For the first time in my lifetime, it looks like that the roster that they have and the direction in which they are going, it is something that is going to be sustainable for the next 6 or 7 years, whereas I can't remember, you know, I go back to you know, watching the Cubs as a kid in 1984 and knowing that that was a veteran team and that it probably wasn't sustainable. 1989 felt like a flukish year. 1998, you had the wild card year with Sammy Sosa. That was fun, but again, not sustainable. 07 and 08, and well, I guess 03 felt like it should have been sustainable. 07 and 08 was kind of like you know, the free agency years. And then last year it started to where you look at a team that should be good for years to come. And like I said, the most equipped to make a deep run in the to the World Series, more so than I think any team in Major League Baseball right now. Doesn't mean they'll win it, but I think they're the most equipped.
All right, Mark. We were wondering how old you were. I was thinking maybe 14 or 15 with a deep voice at that age.
I am 44. So yeah, I think I was 12 when the Cubs won in 19. That's my first like consciousness of the Cubs and sports, like when I'm 10, 11, and 12 years old. So yeah, that was my first Cubs heartbreak, I suppose, 1984.
I tell you, John, he's such a youngin. I mean, you know, he's got me by, you know, I got him by 10 years and you got me by a couple. So we're the old guys here. What do you think about that?
Well, it sounds like we're the old guys, but I guess we talk from experience, Dave, and we've had the privilege of watching Major League Baseball and Major League Sports for a little bit longer than Mark has. So it's kind of nice to see the next generation's view on things. And, you know, to Mark's point about the Cubs being built for the playoffs, they've perhaps done this the right way, and that is that with the cash that the Cubs have always had available to them because of the ownership and the big market, and the fact that they made some astute trades and did some astute drafting, they had the thing that everybody looks for when they're trying to deal away veterans at the end of a season to strengthen pennant contenders. And I'm thinking here of guys like Chapman. The fact that they had young guys like McKinney in the system that would interest the Yankees and entice the Yankees to get rid of a top-quality closer or move a top-quality closer such as Chapman, I think that shows that the Cubs have probably had better management both on the field and in the front office in the last 5 or 6 years than most of us of your generation and my generation have come to know. It's kind of nice to see that they've done this the right way. And, you know, let's hope we're in for some exciting baseball. A ball game at Wrigley Field is still an entertainment piece. It's still something that's always fun to watch, and it's a little bit different than the average cookie-cutter Major League Stadium. So we're all looking forward to that. But I guess the thing that surprised me the most about the National League situation and sort of moving quickly to the National League West here is the absolute collapse of the San Francisco Giants since the All-Star game. At the All-Star game, they had the best record in baseball. Since the All-Star game, they've had the worst record in baseball. Did that surprise you at all? And you had a chance to see that series last weekend, that four-game set at Wrigley Field between the Cubs and the Giants. Were you a little bit surprised at the ease in which the Cubs won that series, Mark?
Yeah, I mean, no matter what the struggles of the Giants have been, and they've been one of the worst teams in baseball, you're absolutely right about that, John, since the All-Star break. I find their whole sort of demise since the All-Star break to be shocking because, you know, if anybody had asked me in the first half of the season, who do you think is the greatest threat to the Cubs when the Cubs were going on their monstrous run, and, you know, it was just assumed the Cubs were going to go to the playoffs and all that kind of stuff, the number one team that I would say was the San Francisco Giants, just because they're kind of have a similar approach to the Cubs in a lot of ways, and in ways that they work the count and they have strong starting pitching, and then they just have a bunch of ballers, you know, against a bunch of guys who just know how to play baseball and compete and win titles, and they have a guy like a Buster Posey who knows what the hell he is doing. So, yeah, I was really, I just in general been really surprised about what has happened to San Francisco. And then maybe even to further the conversation, I've been maybe even just as surprised with the rise of the Los Angeles Dodgers, being that that team has had 20-something players at different times on the disabled list this year. They've had like 15 different starting pitchers this year. And the job that they've been able to do to get themselves back in the first place, I mean, it obviously has something to do with, as you said, with the collapsing of the San Francisco Giants, but the Dodgers have done their own rising. Now, all of that said, I still do not count out the San Francisco Giants. I think that, you know, we'd all be foolish to do something like that, being that they are winners and that they do have a tendency to rise when nobody expects them to do so. So, yeah, there's still a team that you have to keep an eye on, but it is inexplicable as to why that team has collapsed as it has in the second half of the season.
All right, Mark Grody is with us. He is from the Cubs broadcast team, handles pregame and postgame for them on WBBM in Chicago. And, Mark, we've had folks, you also work with WSCR, their sister station there, AM 670. Les Grobstein comes on the show often. Pat Hughes actually comes on the show now and then with us. And lastly here, tell us what it's like to work with Pat Hughes. He used to work with Bob Uecker up there in Milwaukee. Now he's been with the Cubs for years. Tell us about Pat and working with him.
Well, first of all, I'm glad you brought Pat up because Pat wanted me to tell you guys hello. I told him I was coming on the show, and he was very, very excited to hear about that. Tell those gentlemen I said hello. So he wanted me to pass on the hello. I did do that. Pat's terrific. I mean, I've been listening to Pat for a long time before I was lucky enough to get to work with Pat and Ron Coomer and the whole Cubs radio crew. But, like, when you see what Pat is seeing, it's fun because he's just nailing it. You know what I mean? Like, he is just, you know, because, you know, you guys know how it is in baseball. Like, baseball, it could be really straightforward. It could be really boring at times in terms of the play calling that is happening. But then every once in a while in baseball, there are the most chaotic moments where there's a, you know, a crazy 5-3-6-1-2 put out, or, you know, a rundown and a guy scoring or a guy stealing home and a guy's going to second. And he just, like, he just nails it. Like, I'm like, how did he do that? How was he able to stay on top of that? And he reminds me that, you know, that this is why this guy someday is going to be a Hall of Fame broadcaster. He's terrific. He's terrific to work with. He's a super kind guy. I mean, he's been doing this forever, and he's welcomed me into the booth. I haven't even been, you know, covering Major League Baseball for 2 years, and he's been great to me. So he's a blast to work with. He's funny on the air. He's funny off the air. He's the full package.
All right, Mark. Well, thank you very much for coming on the Weekend Sports Report. We're going to hold John into our next segment and talk more around the league, including the Toronto Blue Jays. But, Mark, thanks very much for coming on the show. We'll do it again a few weeks down the line, all right?
Awesome. Dave and John, good to talk to you guys.
I'm Packer Dave, the professor of sports, John Poulter, talking more baseball on the other side. Stick with us.
Hi, everybody. This is Pat Hughes, radio voice of the Chicago Cubs, and I would like to invite you to check out Baseball Voices, the Hall of Fame series. These commemorative audio tributes celebrate the greatest baseball announcers of all time. Harry Carey, Jack Buck, Bob Uecker, Harry Callis, Marty Brenneman, Red Barber, Milo Hamilton, and Dave Niehaus. These CDs are a collection of highlights, history, humorous stories, and Hall of Fame speeches. Available now at BaseballVoices.com. That's BaseballVoices.com.
No doubt about it. Life is getting louder. I'm Danny Lifford with tips for today's homeowner. Stay tuned and we'll talk about putting a hush on all that hubbub right after this.
And it's a championship built from the ground up. Not a fumble in sight. Look at that swing. He's sliding. He made it.
Dad, I'm playing.
Well, I'm proud of that Yellowwood swing set I built. And the game isn't on yet.
But do you have to use a megaphone?
Hey, it brings out the hustle.
Backyard better with Yellowwood brand pressure-treated pine. Download your project at buildyella.com. If it doesn't have that yellow tag, you don't want it.
It's amazing how much noise pollution we're bombarded with every day. From electronics to traffic and lawnmowers to airplanes, we just can't escape all that unwanted noise.
If building or remodeling is in your not-too-distant future, here are some things you can do to help reduce that clamor. Insulated window units are a good step to eliminate a lot of the noise from reaching the inside of your home. But keep in mind, not all of the noise is coming from outside. You should also consider rooms that generate more noise than others, such as home offices, nurseries, and laundry rooms. In these cases, a good solution is soundproofing the walls by installing an acoustic barrier like insulation between the studs. There's also sound deadening drywall available that will absorb most of all of the noise from one room before it ever reaches other areas of the house. I'm Danny Lippard with tips for today's homeowner.
The Year in Sports, a presentation of CRLRadio.com. I'm Bob Terrell. Join us in 1989 on The Year in Sports. The San Francisco 49ers came off a 17-2 season to go on to the most lopsided game in Super Bowl history to date. The 49ers' 55 points were the most ever scored by one team, and their 45-point margin of victory over the Broncos was the largest ever. The NBA championship was a rematch of the previous year's round between the Detroit Pistons and the LA Lakers. This time, however, it was the Pistons over the Lakers in a four-game sweep. The World Series that year is best remembered as the Earthquake Series. It caused a 10-day disruption in play. It also was the most one-sided contest in the history of the World Series. The Oakland A's led all but two innings of the four-game sweep. San Francisco never had the lead. In Stanley Cup playoff action, the Calgary Flames won an all-Canadian final against the Montreal Canadiens 4-2. I'm Bob Terrell. Thanks for joining us in 1989 on The Year in Sports, a presentation of CRLRadio.com.
Paid non-attorney spokesperson. Are you over the age of 60 and been diagnosed with lung cancer? If so, you and your family may qualify for a cash award. Our experienced attorneys are standing by to evaluate whether you have a lung cancer claim that qualifies you for a cash award. The consultation is absolutely free, and there is no risk and no money out of pocket. We only receive a fee when we secure you and your family a settlement. 250,000 people are diagnosed with lung cancer every year. You're not alone in this battle. We can help make sure that you and your family are financially safe and that medical expenses are covered. Again, if you've been diagnosed with lung cancer and are over age 60, call now. Don't delay. There are deadlines for filing claims. We're standing by 24/7. Call us at 1-800-249-0215. 1-800-249-0215. Again, that's 1-800-249-0215. Attorney Advertising. William Stepacker Jr. is the attorney responsible for this ad. Main office, Granton, Pennsylvania. May not be available in all states.
Are you crying?
No.
Are you crying? Are you crying? There's no crying. There's no crying in baseball.
Welcome back to the Weekend Sports Report. I'm Packer Dave. Our holdover from the last segment is the professor of sports, John Poulter. And we're also joined again by Steve Leventhal. And let's talk AL East right now, John. The Toronto Blue Jays find themselves in second place as of this recording in the division with a 77-62 record. You are in Toronto, and that's where you live. So your thoughts on the Blue Jays right now and how they're looking going down the home stretch here.
Well, the Blue Jays have become a very frustrating team to watch. One day they'll go out and score 8 or 9 runs, and the next day they'll have trouble getting 1 or 2. Just got swept by the Yankees after losing 2 of 3 in Tampa Bay. Not the best road trip that they've had. They now find themselves a game down, whereas 10 days ago they were 2 games up. But a huge series this weekend here in Toronto, 3-game set, Friday night, Saturday afternoon, Sunday afternoon, with those Boston Red Sox. And I think that series is going to go a long way to determining who has the upper hand as we work down to the last couple of weeks of this pennant race. But, you know, I really think that it's still going to come down to that very last series of the year, which is the 3-game series between those two teams at Fenway Park in Boston. And let's hope that it's 1 or 2 games in terms of a difference before we get to that last series, because most of the division races in baseball, with 1 or 2 exceptions, are pretty well wrapped up. So the fact that the AL East is that close is getting a lot of attention for American League Baseball, Major League Baseball, and certainly baseball north of the border here in Canada.
Well, and it's interesting watching the on a rare night where I was actually watching baseball, the Cardinals Pittsburgh Pirates game, and the announcers were sort of contemplating, well, what happens if three teams all tie for first place? And he alluded to the scenarios, but he said it would really take a mathematician. So I suppose that might be in your purveyance, where you could explain to some degree of relevance what the scenarios would be for three-way ties with team one, team two, team three, that kind of stuff. But because you're going to win the division, but I guess you also have a shot. If they don't win the division, they're still in contention for the wild card in the American League.
Yeah, it looks kind of like at least one wild card team in the American League will come out of the AL East, perhaps even two. As it stands as we speak this afternoon, we see the Red Sox in first place, and we see the Blue Jays and the Baltimore Orioles, the two teams that would be qualifying for the wild card. But the Tigers are only one game out of the wild card spot, and the Astros are only two out. And surprisingly, the Yankees only 2.5 out, thanks to that sweep of the Blue Jays this week. So it's going to be a good race. And, Houston is a classic example of a team here that, if they could just get their act together in one or two spots, they wouldn't even be fighting for a wild card spot. To find themselves 8.5 games behind the Texas Rangers, who have the best record in the American League. But the Astros are a woeful 3-13 against those Texas Rangers. Can you imagine if they just split those games at 8-8? What kind of a race we'd have in the AL West? I guess from a Blue Jays fan standpoint, it's actually good news because it means that the Astros are further down in the wild card pecking order. But if Houston could have won two or three of those games against Texas that they lost, we'd have an even tighter race. So it's definitely going to come down to the wire. There's no doubt in my mind that that's the way it's going to end.
And then, the one team that's in the conversation but isn't getting maybe the national conversation yet, look at the Cleveland Indians quietly, not quite running away with the AL Central, but certainly having their way in what's probably a weaker year for the AL Central. The White Sox started out blazes, and then, of course, they fell back to earth rather promptly. And, the Twins are horrible again. The Kansas City Royals, fresh off the World Series, they're just, humming along, but they probably don't have a shot at anything except a wild card.
Well, I think Kansas City kind of left it too late. They had a horrible month spread over the June 30th, July 1st weekend. They went to for about 3 weeks there where I think they played less than 400 baseball. And you can never count out the team that won the championship the previous year unless they've completely gutted the ball club. But I think Kansas City has left it a little bit late. And, we've talked a couple of times with our colleague Jeff Rich about the Indians. Of course, Jeff, a diehard Indians fan, Cleveland native. This is probably a good year to be a Cleveland Indian fan because I think the Indians, maybe other than Texas, might be the best team in the American League. They, too, had a little bit of a lull where they didn't seem to want to score any runs, but they seem to have broken out of that as we speak, and they're now back with a fairly decent lead in that American League Central. They're 5.5 up on the Tigers, 8.5 up on the defending Kansas City Royals. I got to think Cleveland is probably the team there that can punch its ticket to the postseason and as a division champion. I work on the theory that, usually if you can make up a game a week in the standings, you can generally say that you're still in the race. And the Tigers are 5.5 back. There's not 5.5 weeks left in the season. So unless there's a complete collapse in Cleveland, I got to think that the Indians are going to sail home in that division. And perhaps this is Cleveland's year after the Cavaliers won the NBA title after being down to San Francisco or Golden State. Perhaps this is the year for the Indians. But that pitching staff in Cleveland is tremendous. And, of course, they picked up Andrew Miller to help out at the back end with Allen. And now we're looking at a pretty good back end. That's really a 7-inning ball game now with Cleveland, much the same as it was a 6- or 7-inning ball game with Kansas City last year. We saw what a strong bullpen did for the Royals. Don't be surprised if we see the Indians do the same thing in 2016.
Yes, absolutely. It's a great year to be a Cleveland fan. And that's the first time in a long time that the folks in Ohio, Northeast Ohio, can say that.
Yeah, I'm not a big fan or following fan of Cleveland sports, but I'm just as familiar with the drought there as everybody else is. The Cavaliers broke it. I've lived in North America since 1967, and I don't remember too many winning seasons of any team in Cleveland. So it has been a drought. They say every dog has its turn. So maybe this is Cleveland's turn to perhaps win a couple of titles. And they did, in fact, win the Calder Cup, the American Hockey League Championship this year as well with the Lake Erie Monsters. So maybe this is Cleveland's year.
Well, and, you know, the one team that we really didn't get a chance to discuss, you guys previously in your interview with Mark Grody, what is about the Washington Nationals? You don't want to necessarily factor them out of the equation either.
No, you can't factor the Nationals out. I mean, you can't factor out any team that's been consistently good for a number of years, has kind of choked a little bit in the postseason, still in first place. They've got an 8.5 game lead over the Mets. I'm not completely sold on the Washington Nationals. I do believe they're a good baseball team. They've got good pitching. They're a good team top to bottom. But I look at the rest of that National League East, and I really don't see any major contenders in that division. So I wonder just how much of the Nationals' success is perhaps the fact that the rest of that division is not doing very well. And, you know, they've all been inconsistent. A lot of them have not been scoring any runs. Philadelphia and Atlanta have been woefully weak for most of the year, and both the Mets and latterly the Marlins have not played well. They've both been very streaky teams. But I see that Steven Strasburg came out of the game on a Wednesday night with an elbow problem, and he's such a big part of that National Ball Club. I have to wonder just how strong they might be if one of their top starters goes down for the postseason or for any length of the balance of the regular season. We all know that pitching is at least 70% of the game, and certainly in the postseason when you shorten your rotation to sometimes three, sometimes four starters, you don't like to give up on a talent such as Strasburg, and that might be a big hole for the Nationals to fill. And of course, the Nationals have got this issue where they have failed a number of times when they've been favorites the last 3 or 4 years. So there's a little bit of a stigma there that they have to beat, but certainly not a bad ball club. Dusty Baker's done a pretty good job there, and Baker himself, I guess, has a little bit of a challenge in terms of winning in the postseason. He's taken teams to the postseason before and only once has won the big prize. So perhaps Mr. Baker has something to prove as well. So I'm looking forward to some good postseason baseball, and I certainly expect the Nationals to be part of it.
Yeah, and the other, you know, one observation I would give you, you noticed in the interview you did with Mark, he exhibits a lot of the same trepidation that most of the fans in Chicago do. You know, they don't want to, you know, they certainly, the Chicago Cubs have all the tools this year. They've certainly run out ahead of the pack, but everybody has that, well, you know, we don't want to jinx it. We don't want to be too careful. You just never know what can happen. They still have that, they don't have the swagger, you know, that teams will have going into the postseason with the proven track record and so forth.
Yeah, the Cubs are still the Cubs, and unfortunately, they still have, as a team, they still have something to prove. It's unfair to blame today's Cubs players and management for the failures and the lack of success for other Cub teams over the last 100 and some years, but they're still the Cubs, and until they prove otherwise, I think most casual fans and maybe even some diehard Cub fans will look at it that, hey, show me what you've done lately.
John, thanks very much for your contribution today, and we'll be talking baseball all for the next probably 6 weeks or so. Looking forward to it. 7 weeks, probably. So we're looking forward to it, and you know your stuff, so thanks for coming on.
Thanks, Dave, and thanks, Steve. My pleasure as always. Have a good week, guys, and we'll chat in the near future.
All right, we'll talk to you then. And Steve, good job today. You know, you're off to a good start on the Weekend Sports Report. I hope you can keep this momentum going.
Well, we have all the momentum. Or is it going to be Green Bay has the momentum pretty soon?
Yeah, that's hopefully what's going to happen here with the Packers. Well, we want to thank you for listening to the Weekend Sports Report on MileHighRadio.com, ZComRadio.com, and InternetFM.com. Check us out online, InternetFM.com, archive shows up there, and, of course, all kinds of info on the guys that happen to be on this program. At internetfm.com. So for Steve Leventhal, for Jeff Rich, for John Poulter, for Mark Grody, I'm Packer Dave saying thanks a lot. Have a great day. Take care. Bye now.
Bye-bye.
Goodbye.
Keep your feet in the ground and keep reaching for the stars.
That's right, tough guy.
Bye-bye.
Get some beer, scumbag.
Goodbye.
Tell you what, dipstick, you can just come on down here and smooch my big old white butt. Pucker up, buttercup.
Yeah, I hear you, fruitcake.
Oh, it's hopeless. Now you ought to club them and eat their bones.
Goodbye.
Now you ladies, carry on.
Excellent.
See you later, pal. I'm going home.
Wait a minute.
Well, I'm glad that's over. Now it's over.
Good night, ladies.
Good night, sir.
Let's get out of here.
The Year in Sports, a presentation of CRLRadio.com. I'm Bob Terrell. Join us in 1995 on The Year in Sports. A good year for the Cowboys in 95. Once again, the NFC champions with a 15-4 record. In Super Bowl 30, following the season, the MVP award went to the Cowboys' Larry Brown. It was Dallas over the Steelers in the end, 27-17. The Houston Rockets found their way back into NBA championship play, this time taking on the Orlando Magic. This matchup put two centers on center stage, Shaquille O'Neal of the Magic and Hakeem Olajuwon of the Rockets. In the end, it was the Rockets winning out in overtime. The 1995 World Series matched the Atlanta Braves against the Cleveland Indians. The Braves won in six games, capturing their third world championship in franchise history. In Stanley Cup play in 1995, the New Jersey Devils swept the Detroit Red Wings in a four-game sweep to take the title. I'm Bob Terrell. Thanks for joining us in 1995 on The Year in Sports, a presentation of CRLRadio.com.
Are squirrels attacking your bird feeder or getting into your chimney or attic? This is Danny Lipper with tips for today's homeowner. Stay tuned and we'll talk about a humane way to solve this fuzzy tail problem right after this.
Beautify your outdoor living spaces with Pavestone's elegant collection of pavers, retaining walls, patio stones, and edging. Pavestone's easy do-it-yourself products have a unique way of transforming landscapes into beautiful dreamscapes. Discover how you can enhance your outdoor living spaces with attractive and durable interlocking patio stones, driveway pavers, steps, retaining walls, pathway edging, fire pits, and planters by visiting pavestone.com.
Squirrels can be entertaining to watch, jumping, playing, and swinging like acrobats. But for the most part, they're mischievous little rodents who sometimes get into and mess up our homes. You need to get rid of them, but issues of conscience aside, killing them isn't the solution since they might die inside your home, creating a smellier problem. The solution, believe it or not, may be shaving cream. Squirrels hate the stuff. If you have squirrels in your chimney, attic, or attacking food in bird feeders, try creating a barrier of shaving cream. Here's another suggestion. While it may smell good to you, squirrels also hate the smell of aftershave lotion even more. So if these furry little acrobats have invaded your home, don't reach for the poison. Just give them a fragrant splash and watch them run away. I'm Danny Lipford with tips for today's homeowner.
Are you living with pain? I was, after a nasty fall. I got relief with 1 hour pain relief. I'm Barry Yarconi, president, and here's Lisa, a Marine who was injured in Iraq.
After surviving an explosion, I was on horrible painkillers for lingering head, shoulder, back, and knee pain, but I hated the dangers and side effects. My friend told me about 1 hour pain relief, and now I'm off the drugs.
1 hour pain relief is the result of 15 years of research on an amazing extract from hops, the plant used to flavor beer.
Whether your pain is from an injury or just aging, you get safe all-day relief in less than 1 hour.
We're so sure you'll love 1 hour pain relief, too, that we'll send you a one-week trial for just a small shipping charge. Call 800-269-9500 right now. That's 800-269-9500. There's no gimmicks, no obligation, no automatic shipments. Stop living with pain. Call 800-269-9500 for your one-week trial or visit onehourpainrelief.com. That's 800-269-9500.
This is Bart Shore, and I want to invite you to visit InternetFM.com. This great site has online stations streaming rock music 24/7, hundreds of podcasts with on-demand music, sports, and talk programs. Also get daily features, music news, and useful links. Our radio stations have limited or no commercials at all. InternetFM.com. It's totally free. No sign-up required. If you love music, then InternetFM.com is for you. Also on Facebook at InternetFM.com.